You're listening to the Limitless Broadcasting Network.
Hey, this is Tyler Mannion. You're listening to You Can't Kill the Boogeyman podcast. Check it out.
What's your favorite scary movie?
What's the boogeyman?
You hang up on me again, I'll gut you like a fish, understand?
It's showtime.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to You Can't Kill the Boogeyman podcast. We are your hosts. I'm Robbie.
And I'm Sammy.
And today, we got a cool show for you. It's been kind of mediocre. But today's show is actually sponsored by Ranch Radio, our new radio program. Mm-hmm. If you like to rant, if you're frustrated about your day, you can be a part of this show. You can dial 844-857-7268 and ran away. And this radio show is on our subscription platform, limitlessbroadcasting.com. You can join that now and hear all the ranting you want.
Yep.
But the best thing about this is the best rant gets $1,000. So I know holidays are coming up, so if you're in a pinch for cash, maybe you can win our best rant contest. That number again is 844-857-7268. I, Limitless Broadcasting, will be at Tidewater Horror Convention September 12th through the 14th.
Yeah, it's coming
That's
up.
In Virginia Beach.
Very soon.
Very cool guest. Daniel Harris will be there. She's the top headliner. So that's what got me going. And I was like, yeah, she's a pretty big star, especially in the horror field.
Yeah.
She's a scream queen. So if you're interested in meeting me, supporting the platform, something like that, come by to purchase a shirt. Come by and say hi. That's the Tidewater Horror Convention.
In Virginia Beach.
Yeah, I've never been to Virginia Beach.
We've driven by it.
I've driven kind by of, it.
Yeah.
But I've never been there.
Yeah.
I was told there's a Navy base there. So I'm excited to. That's one thing this does. Running a network like this, it does let you travel a lot.
Oh, for sure.
So I'm seeing large portion of the country. So, yeah. So today, we are talking about the new I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Yes.
Very cool movie. I'll let you.
Just in theaters. Yep.
Just in theaters. I'm sure it's going to be hitting streaming sometime soon. How about you jump on in there?
All right. So I Know What You Did Last Summer. It was released by Sony Pictures Releasing in the U.S. on July 18th, 2025. So this is the newest one. Our summary: when five friends inadvertently cause a deadly car accident, they cover up their involvement and make a pact to keep it a secret rather than face the consequences. A year later, their past comes back to haunt them, and they're forced to confront the horrifying truth. Someone knows what they did last summer and is hellbent on revenge. As one by one, the friends are stalked by a killer. They discover this has happened before, and they turn to two survivors of the legendary Southport Massacre of 1997 for help. Yes. Two taglines for this one. Karma is a killer. That's not bad.
I do like that one.
Yeah. And you get the ending you deserve.
I do like that one, too.
Yeah, I think they're good taglines. Yeah, I think they did a good job. This movie was directed by Jennifer Caton Robinson. She also worked on the screenplay with Sam Lansky and the story with Liam McKendrick. So she's heavily involved in all this.
Sounds like it.
And the characters are still based on the characters created by Lois Duncan, since it was, you know, a book, which I think we talked about before.
Yes, we did.
Cast and characters. So Madeline Klein is Danica Richards, one of the five friends who's being hunted. So she's also in the Ozarks.
Okay.
Show. That's the same actress.
Is it? I thought it was Outer Banks.
Outer Banks. That's what I meant.
Outer Banks.
Not Ozarks.
I was like, wait a minute.
Whatever. Same shit. Whatever. The Outer Banks.
Outer Banks.
The same actress. Chase Sue Wonders as Ava Brooks, also one of the friends. So this actress, I believe, is she's the one that's in the studio.
Okay.
That actress. Okay. Jonah Howard King as Milo Griffin, again, one of the friends. Tyreek Withers is Teddy Spencer. And then we have Sarah Pigeon as Stevie Ward. So these are our five friend group kids.
Okay.
That are being hunted, supposedly. Billy Campbell is Grant Spencer, so he's Teddy's father and the real estate developer.
And he was also in the 4400.
Fun fact there.
Fun fact.
Freddie Prinze Jr. comes back as Ray Bronson. He's now a bar owner in this one. Jennifer Love Hewitt is back as Julie James, and she is a college professor.
We had to move up there, guys.
In this movie, yeah. We've got Austin Nichols as Judah Gillespie, the local pastor. And then Gabriette as Tyler Trevino. She's the podcaster.
Okay.
Who shows up and is obsessed with the original 1997 massacre and is doing a show about that. Joshua Orphan comes in as Wyatt, Danica's fiancé. Her new fiance as the movie progresses to the year later. And then we've got some surprise guests. Brandy Norwood is back as Carla, and she shows up right at the very end.
Wait, to spoil that one.
Credits. Well, clearly we're doing spoilers. Yeah. Is that not? We always do spoilers.
No, absolutely.
Because I didn't even do the biggest spoiler yet, which is that Sarah Michelle Gellar is not just referenced in this movie, not just shown in a photo, but she is in the film as Helen Shivers again. She shows up in A Nightmare of Danica's.
Hey, whatever works, right?
Mm-hmm. Way to bring her back. So our box office as of 8/30/25, budget was an estimated $18 million. Opening weekend, it made $13 million. And so far gross in the U.S. and Canada is $32 million and worldwide $64 million. So it has made its money back.
Sarah Michelle Gellar wanted some of that $18 million budget money.
That's why she was like,
that's sure. Why she was like, let me get in here.
I'll come do the movie again. That's fine. Ratings wise, 5.3 out of 10 on IMDb, 68% popcorn meter ratings on Rotten Tomatoes, and a 2.8 out of 5 on Google.
Wow, 2.8. They really butchered this movie.
People don't really care for this film.
I've noticed that.
It's really, and its numbers are not great when you look at the other two movies that came before it. So.
I think, well, we'll get into it, but keep going.
So body count, there are 9 kills in this movie. So we have the crash victim, Sam Owen, Wyatt, Tyler, groundskeeper, Milo Griffin, Teddy Spencer, Grant Spencer, the pastor, and then ultimately Ray at the end of the movie. So Wyatt's death. So spoiler. So, in this movie, we learn that our killers, because there are 2 killers.
Way to take a page out of Scream there.
Yeah, just like Scream. There are 2 killers in this movie. One being the outsider, Stevie, which I guess in hindsight should have been pretty obvious.
I clocked that one coming in. I was like, okay, it's her.
I did not get it right away. And who's our second killer?
It's Ray. From the OG original cast.
It's Ray. He has, yeah, flipped the script. So Wyatt's death, this is done by Stevie because she takes credit for the killing during the final boat sequence in the film. And she would also know how to get around the house undetected and mess with the pool lights because she was a guest at Danica's party. So she would have, you know, known how to get around in there. Tyler's death and Ava's attack would be Ray. Because Stevie showed up to supposedly save Ava from the cage trap from the fisherman.
Yeah.
So she didn't do it. And then...
that's how he ends up getting cut.
Tyler also unmasked the killer, and she knew who it was. And she wouldn't have known who Stevie was. So that's another indicator that we had Ray there.
Okay.
Because she was doing the podcast about the show. So,
right.
Or about the killer. So she would have known who he was. The groundskeeper's death, and then the attack on Danica and Teddy. This was Stevie. The groundskeeper was a loose end who needed to be killed off as he was about to reveal to Danica and Teddy who dropped off the fresh flowers at the grave. So that's why they had to get rid of him, you know, by pulling up the security footage.
Right, right.
And they would have seen it was Stevie. So that's why. Milo's death was Ray, as he was not present in the house was strong enough to carry out the murder. Makes sense. Teddy and Grant's deaths were also from Ray because he had injuries from the attacks that Ava sees at the end. Because remember, she sees that he's bandaged up.
Yeah.
And she's like, uh-oh.
That's weird. How did you get that?
Yep. And the pastor's death happens off screen, but Stevie admits to killing him before the climax as a payback for taking his hush money and helping to cover Sam's death up. So, yeah, that's how those go down. And then, of course, Ray's death is done by...
What? By,
Julie.
Julie, yes.
None other than his ex-girlfriend.
Ex-wife.
Ex-wife. Ex-everything.
Ex-everything.
Yes.
Absolutely.
So, trivia. In 2014, director Mike Flanagan and writer Jeff Howard revealed plans for a reboot of I Know What You Did Last Summer. In a 2016 episode of the Shockwaves podcast, Flanagan said that the film would not have any connections to the 1973 novel or the 1997 film, and that the scope of the film was going to have a budget of $15 to $20 million.
Estimated. Right off the bat. It's cool to be like, oh, we got a $20 million budget.
They did approach some actors, including Selena Gomez. And the planned film eventually fell through, and then they did a TV series reboot, I Know What You Did Last Summer, and it was canceled after one season because of low ratings and negative reviews.
So I wanted to bring that up, too. Mm-hmm. I have not watched that, but it's on Amazon.
Yeah.
I wanted to know how it was. Like, mm-hmm. I knew it was there.
Low ratings.
But I was just like, oh, I just haven't gotten around to it.
Out and see.
Yeah, we should definitely check that out.
And see what we think about it. So, yeah. Writer-director Robinson couldn't bring Sarah Michelle Gellar's Helen Shivers back to life for the sequel. So, I guess the director was telling Entertainment Weekly that she tried relentlessly to fit Gellar into the new movie. Now, this was before, like, everyone saw she came back as a, you know, in a dream sequence, but, or nightmare sequence. But her efforts were for naught because Robinson could not maneuver around the fact that Helen Shivers is dead. She said, I tried, okay? I harassed her, but she is dead. I tried to pitch some crazy shit, too. I was like, what if it's like you weren't dead and you were actually alive but in hiding? And Sarah's like, I was on ice. I was the most dead a person could be. You could see my frozen body. I was like, yeah, but what if? And she said, I am dead. I am Sarah Dead Gellar. And that whole interaction just made me laugh. Now, of course, like I just said, they clearly worked out a way to still bring her back. But I just thought that was really funny that for a while she was just trying to bring her back as a character.
A distant cousin. Could have been like how they did in Scrubs.
Uh-huh.
The secretary or the nurse
Roberts. Yeah.
They were like, aren't you somebody? And yeah, then they roll with it.
Then they just start calling her Laverne again because she looked like Laverne's character. Yeah. And but they were not related. They were, yeah.
They could have done exactly like that.
And like, you look exactly like Helen. Yeah. They could have just ignored it.
They could have been like Helen Part 2. There you are.
Yes, there you go. Helen again. There you go. So the director also explained how Ray and Julie are still alive after the 1998 sequel's ending where it looked like their characters were killed. So she said, the way I've approached the franchise is that I feel like those final scenes in the first two movies live outside the canon. Because in the first movie, she gets attacked through the shower, through the glass door. And in the second movie, she gets pulled under the bed, but they're both alive and well. And I will say this is where I've continued the tradition in our film, which I think that makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, I never thought that that was like a real thing. It's just a way to tie up the movie and give you another jump scare.
I figure it could be a dream. They're like dreaming in it. That's exactly how they ended up.
It's not a real thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this is Jennifer Love Hewitt's first horror role since the 1998 sequel, and her only her third overall, with the first being the original 1997 film. And in 1997, she said that she didn't like horror films and she has trouble watching them from the genre since they scare her so much. Not wanting to have been a typecast as a scream queen, she turned down numerous films that were offered to her, including The Ring, Valentine, Scream 3, and Dark Water.
Wow, she got offered a lot.
I think that's interesting because I do think even though she hasn't been in a lot, people still, to a certain extent, are like, she's kind of scream queen.
She could have been in, you said she could be in Scream 3?
They offered her a role.
That would have been pretty cool.
Yeah, probably as one of the actors, I would assume, but she did not want to do that, so. But I guess part of my problem is I think of her in the episode of Boy Meets World 2, where she comes back as Jennifer Love Pfefferman.
Along Came Sean.
Mm-hmm, and she's clearly, like, being treated like the scream queen there. Because it was all right around the same time that these movies were coming out.
Is that when Angela and her are, like, competing to be the scream queen?
The screaming, yeah. And Angela's just like, excuse me.
I'm the scream queen.
Exactly. I'm the one who does that around here. And she's like, sorry. I didn't know.
Weren't her and Will Friedle dating at the time?
In real life, they were, in fact, a couple when that aired.
Yes. That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why did they break up?
I assume they just grew apart. Okay. I don't know. He doesn't seem to have any ill will towards her, so.
Man, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, they seem like they would still get along.
Yeah. Absolutely.
With a runtime of 111 minutes, this is the longest film in the franchise. And this is the first I Know What You Did Last Summer film to actually be released in July. Although they still didn't do it over 4th of July weekend.
That's crazy to me.
Which is interesting.
That's crazy to me.
I don't know why they didn't.
I think that's a blunder, like a missed opportunity.
It's strange to me that they did July, but then they still didn't do the fourth, but whatever. Jennifer Love Hewitt said that she and Freddie Prinze Jr. were called the old ones.
On set? That's pretty funny.
I don't think I would find that funny as either actor. I would just be like, how about you all go fuck yourselves?
Or you're an old head. An old head.
No. The house where Julie lives is actually Buffy Summers' house in Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
I want to go back and rewatch it just because of the fact
that I can kind of picture it in my head now. And I'm just, I mean, we obviously saw it different ways and it doesn't look the same.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But I'm just like, that's a cool fact. I do like that.
I wonder what Sarah said on set. Oh, I remember when we were shooting it here and here and here.
I don't know if Sarah would have been there because... I mean, well, Freddie did have one scene, right, where he showed up at her house. So she could have been there.
Yeah.
It just depends when they filmed it.
I'm assuming she was offset somewhere being like, hey, I know she's a producer on this, right?
I don't know that she's a producer on this. I'll have to pull it up.
I remember when she was, she leaked the photo on Instagram. I think she said she was a producer on this.
Let's see if we can pull up real quick. Let me go to IMDb.
Our trusted IMDb.
Go to IMDb Pro. And what is it? Filmmakers, right? Let's see.
Yeah.
Okay. Director, writers, producers. Matt Gustafson, Neil Moritz, Karina, Jennifer Caton Robbins. Well, she's an executive producer and the writer and everything. Jackie Chanu. Nope. I do not see any mention.
That was my fault then.
Of her.
I thought she was on set
and took the photo. Because wasn't it a thing where she wasn't supposed to
share it? Yeah, she leaked it.
And
she
everyone's was like, bro.
Some idiot.
Sarah.
She was like, some idiot leaked a photo. And she was like, that's
funny.
Me.
That was very funny the way she said that. She's just like, it was me. I'm the idiot. Poor Jennifer. Or Sarah.
Sarah Michelle.
Sarah's trying so hard. She just was excited to be on the set, I think.
Oh, absolutely. I feel like... I know sometimes they have a clause where they take your phones, mm-hmm. especially when...
But she wasn't probably filming that day. She probably was just visiting.
So. Right, I know. But even people on big sets, they're like, oh, phones here.
Yeah, there's a reason for that.
Yeah.
Although, who wants to be the one to tell Sarah Michelle Gellar she can't have her phone?
I know, absolutely. Freddie would. I'd leave that to Freddie. Be like,
I don't know if Freddie would either. Oh, like, she can have it.
They've been married a long time. They get each other's sense of humor.
Yeah. So Jennifer Love Hewitt had made it clear that she would reprise the character of Julie only if she was given a more substantial role in the new installment. In an interview with Parade, she said, "I'm going to come back 27 years later. I don't want to just be in it for 5 seconds. I don't want it just to be a thing like, oh, there's the ghost of I Know What You Did past. Here it is. I want to carve out the time to really be in it to make it matter for people." And I think that's...
I think that's fair. Well-deserved. I mean, yeah. Without her, mm-hmm. What are you waiting for? You know, that's iconic. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't be there. Mm-hmm. This franchise would not be there.
Yeah, so I think it's reasonable for her to say, I don't want to come back as just some, like, bullshit cameo for 2 seconds. I want to actually be in the film.
No, I agree with that.
So if you can't do that, I'm not going to come back.
No, I agree with that 100%.
When she embarked on the new movie, the director thought about the iconic look of the hook-wielding fisherman killing off the characters one by one. I think the original slicker and the original hook work really well in the original movies. That said, I thought we could ratchet it up. So she worked with costume designer Mary Ann Sale, and they updated the costume to fit the identity of the new murderers and to amplify the wardrobe's more threatening qualities. I wanted the hook to be sharper, so we created a blade on the inside of the hook. And there are a couple of sequences when someone's throat is slit with the inside of the blade, and I wanted the slicker to feel more utilitarian, so we gave it a hood.
Like the Batman. Mm-hmm. That's what I compared it to. Yeah. Like, it's a Batman mask.
Yeah. And the main guiding principle of the costume was realism, in keeping with Robinson's desire to keep the movie as grounded as possible amid the heightened humor and horror. So we wanted it to feel it's something that came out of somebody's closet. Something that has been there for years and years and years is now being used to cloak a murderer, because this is not a supernatural villain. It's a person who is murdering. So I want it to feel more real and more intense.
I think I like that. Mm-hmm. That it's not a supernatural one. It's a person mm-hmm. that's pissed, and they're like, all right, fuck around and find out now.
I mean, these type of movies, there's always like a certain bit of like, how the fuck did they survive that sort of deal? And it's the same thing with Scream, right?
Yeah.
Everybody in the Ghostface costume is a person. They're not some Michael Myers character.
Right.
But they still have their moments where you're like, okay,
so
you should have broken your arm at the way that you fell down the stairs, or, you know, whatever it may be.
So do you think Stu died at the end of Scream 1?
No.
With the TV? No. I think you could have knocked him out, but I
think it would have fucked him up.
You really think so?
All that shit in his face? He probably would have looked a little funky afterwards.
Okay.
A bunch of scars.
I could see that. It would fuck up his face, but I don't think he would die from it.
No. But we shall see. Scream 7 is among us.
I just don't want them to fuck up the franchise.
Yeah.
No more than they already have.
Well, we'll see. Nev is back.
Yeah.
And Kevin, so we'll see.
Hopefully they backed up the Brinks truck for her.
Mm-hmm, I want
$20 million for this.
She should have gotten a lot more than that.
Just for fuck you money.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Let's see. Going back to this movie, Robinson said, it's not just about when it's revealed, but also the amount of information. How are you telling a story in a way that doesn't give too much away but keeps the audience engaged? It's hard to keep people's attention because we live in the age of iPhones and TikTok and scrolling and all of that. So it's a really delicate balance building a mystery like this for modern audiences, which is true. And let's see, we already talked about Brandy coming back. Jennifer Love Hewitt also said she wouldn't participate in the film if her character was killed. And at the premiere, she said Julie James will never die.
She's going to be the final girl forever.
Yeah, at least if they continue doing these movies, she's never going to die.
Well, that's understandable.
So we talked about Sarah coming back as Helen Shivers. She's in her Croaker Queen attire with her crown. And, of course, Geller is digitally de-aged for the cameo to look like she did in 1997. And they kept her involvement hidden.
That probably This budget had $18 million, right?
That had a lot of money just to DH her.
Probably took a lot of money to DH her.
Not that Sarah looks bad, but she certainly doesn't look like she did.
Yeah, back
27 years ago.
Back then.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Gabriette's character Tyler is chased prior to her death in the same location and under the same means as Sarah's character Helen from the original. Both women attempt to escape through the back, discover the fisherman downstairs, escape to the upper floor by the freight elevator, and then they're by pulling the rope to get up there, and then both are killed outside. So, yeah, there was a tie in there.
Do you think this? Are you done?
No.
Okay.
Can you not see that I'm still scrolling?
Keep going.
Rude. Anyway, in a moment of foreshadowing, Danica is gifted a mermaid statuette from Stevie, and Danica, much like a mermaid, washes ashore in the final act, having successfully survived Stevie's attempts at killing her and throwing her overboard.
I never got that.
I wouldn't have known that either.
I would have never. This. I mean, watching this, I would have been. I never got that. I was like, okay, whatever.
I wouldn't have picked up on any of that. But it's a nice little spoiler
head. It's fun to see where the filmmakers are at, their heads are at.
Yeah. About 30 minutes in the following year, the five friends sit around discussing the previous events. Stevie is wearing a belt buckle in the shape of an anchor, which is foreshadowing that she is one of the killers. And then finally, Freddie Prinze Jr. says that he's really proud of his performance and happy with the direction of the character, but acknowledges that the twist is a big swing that may prove divisive. I know some fans are going to be like, you took Ray away from us. That's not fair. And I get it, he said. There's going to be other fans that think it's awesome. And I get that. I appreciate both sides, but both sides need to know that I gave everything in that performance and I know how to give and I committed 100%. I loved what they did with the character. I wouldn't have done it. And despite Ray's death, Prince isn't ready to say that this is the end for him in the franchise. As far as saying goodbye, he says, you never freaking know in a horror movie, which is true.
I mean, honestly, we didn't really actually see him die.
No, so, but it's heavily
implied
because it's on the news.
No, absolutely.
But you never say never.
You can clearly tell that they're planning to do another one.
I would assume so.
But going back to the whole Danica thing with the whole shape of the bell buckle, how many of you, be honest with me?
That wasn't Danica, that was Stevie's.
Stevie, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. How many of you actually caught that?
I think there's going to be people out there who are just like, oh yeah, I noticed it right away and I knew she was definitely a killer.
I mean, I notice a lot of things when we watch movies, but that is one thing that escaped me. And I wasn't paying attention to her belt buckle.
I am generally really terrible at figuring out who the killer is for the most part. And I will sometimes get it when it's like the most obvious moment right before they're going to reveal it. And I'm like, aha, but it's not really me being that smart. It's because they clearly are ready to tell us who it is. However, I will say there was like one point in the movie, and I know I told you this, where I was just like, if they made Ray the killer, that would be really awesome, but they would never do that.
No, I do remember.
Because I thought it would be too, the fans are just like Freddie said, that would cause maybe a division in the fans who've been watching this franchise since 30 years ago who are not going to like it. Some fans will like it, some won't. I was like, that would be legit if they did that, but they probably won't. So I just automatically was like, it's not going to be Ray.
Don't.
Yeah.
I mean, I think this movie was made for a different genre of people. Mm-hmm. Because we have that nostalgic factor from the 98 one. Mm-hmm. And that's the reason why that they brought both of them back. There's people actually involved with the original movie.
Right.
That's like, wow. Mm-hmm. I know they did a third one of these. I still know what you did last summer.
Yeah. Yeah.
No. I never watched that, but that had Leonora in
it. I always know what you did last summer. Something like that.
But they didn't have anybody attached to that.
And they implied in that one, I believe everybody was dead.
Yeah.
Right?
So, I've heard that. I've never seen it.
I read that somewhere.
But
in the trivia.
When they were rebooting this and they were like, oh, we're going to bring Jennifer Love Hewitt and Freddie back. I was like, okay. Now I'll go see it. Intrigued my intentions.
Right.
Because they're bringing people back from the old movie.
I think that was the goal. Yeah.
I think you can't do a reboot without bringing people back. It just doesn't work.
No, people want to see the original people in it if they're still, assuming they're still alive. They want them involved somehow or another. And
do you think this was a shot for shot remake of it?
No.
No?
And there's very clearly a lot of tie-ins, which they are probably forced to do.
I mean, there were some,
realistically,
there were some shots that were the same as the other one, but I don't think it was an exact shot for shot.
No, it was like different. Homages to the
but
first one.
I think it was paying homage to the first one. That's why they wanted to bring Sarah back in some sort of way.
They were originally going to have Helen show up in A Nightmare of Julie's, but they couldn't coordinate the schedules, so it ended up being Danica's nightmare.
Okay.
Which, I mean, I think it fits as Danica's nightmare, right? Because she talked about Helen to a certain extent and felt like she was like Helen. So
she was the Croaker queen and everything.
Yeah, because of all the tie-ins they had together. Right. So I could see her having a nightmare about her.
Did you like the cast? Did you like the group of friends?
I thought it was a good cast.
Okay.
Of up-and-comers, kids, the younger generation that we're starting to see in other things. So, you know, and
young Hollywood.
I mean, Madeline Klein, like, I mean, I like her so far in what I've seen her in.
Okay.
So, no complaints there. Has having her be one of the leads. And people were happy that they actually let her live.
Yeah.
As opposed to Helen, who did not.
Did not, yeah.
Yeah. I did read that, too, that was a big fan thing that they wanted. The blonde Madeline as Dana could actually live this time.
I get it.
I like that they still fucked with all of them by having her thrown off the boat. So you assume she's dead and then she shows up right at the end.
Right at the end. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So did it surprise you that Ray was the killer?
Only because I didn't think they would ever do it.
Okay.
In my mind, that would have been a cool twist.
Did you? So you liked that? You liked the fact
that I liked it. Did you?
Yeah. I thought it was different. I thought it was something that could add homage to the series. I'm curious where it's going to go because of the ending. Mm-hmm. When Julie goes over to Brandy's house. And they're like, oh, can I come in? She's like, I haven't seen you in years.
Mm-hmm.
Like, out of the blue. And I'm glad they're going to get her back in the mix because I thought she was great in the second one.
Yes.
And so I'm assuming that Freddie Prinze Jr. will be involved in the fourth one.
You never know. Like you said, you never know.
Because I just can't see any other way. Like, you know, he was defeated this time. Now he's going to come back as like the super shredder and be very pissed off. And he's really going to go for these.
And I know I was reading, too, that the way Freddie looked at the character was not like he turned evil, but that you should feel sorry for Ray. Because of everything he's been through, he's like, there's two different sides of processing everything. And Julie clearly is not over everything.
Oh, clearly.
But she has worked her way to getting help, trying to cope as much as she can, whatever. And Ray has kind of done the opposite, it seems.
Well, Julie left. She no longer lives in town.
Yeah, so she should have left, too, but he never.
Exactly. He never stayed in. He now owns the bar that everybody goes to. I mean, it's not like he put it past them.
Right. That's the problem.
He just stuck around, and it's just like history repeating itself.
That's exactly what it is. So it's just interesting, basically, on how two different characters dealt with their shared trauma and what it resulted in.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. I think it was a great twist. I think it added to the story. I think Freddie did give 110%. Because at first you think, oh, he's just a wackadoo. Like, he's just, it's happening, it's happening again.
Well, and he's going to Julie and is basically like, you need to keep your nose out of it, stop looking into it. But the real truth is because he didn't want to get caught.
Right.
I mean, because he knew she would figure it out.
Right.
Which she did.
Because she's the final girl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right at the end, she figured it out, right? Around the time, unfortunately, Ava did.
Yeah.
She was trapped with him, so. Yeah, but I mean, I feel like Stevie, it should have been more obvious. She didn't fit in with the group. She was brought into the group. you know?
Yeah, they saw her going outside. Oh, it was the girl that they used to hang out with. Mm-hmm. And then they brought her back in. And then when the two had a falling out, she was like, oh, the assistant. Mm-hmm. Madeline's assistant.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's always the odd man out, right?
Yeah.
That's how it was in the requel in Scream. Mm-hmm. It was the weirder chick. Mm-hmm. But I do like that they took a page out of Scream and had the two killers. I thought that made the movie more interesting. And they could do more carnage.
Yeah, and it's harder to pinpoint than who it is. Because now you may suspect multiple people, but until you know it is actually multiple people, you're going to be kind of guessing till the end.
Yeah, right? No, I agree with that.
And then you finally figure out, oh, it was actually
two
of them. Even though for a minute we thought it was Stevie. But even on the boat, I was just like, I don't know about this one person thing. You know, that seems like a lot for Stevie. And, now you're trying to play back
the what movie.
You saw in the movie. And, of course, even if you just head back to that one scene we just talked about where she rescues them, she rescues Ava from the cage, she very clearly couldn't have been the killer. There was another person.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I still agree that this movie is definitely made for us, the millennials.
Yeah, and I don't know. Like I said, it seems like a mixed bag of reactions. People saying it was, like, boring, and I don't know.
What would you rate this thing?
I mean, I'd give it an 8.
Okay, I could do an 8.
Yeah. I didn't think it was
bad.
But I don't think it was terrible.
I would say number 2 was the best. It was more entertaining. Out of all of them in the franchise.
I know you prefer number 2.
I think number 2. That's why when I'm putting on this, I always put on number 2. Because I always think it's more interesting.
Yeah.
Even though I like Sarah Michelle Gellar, even though I like for Freddie Prinze Jr. and the boyfriend from Cruel Intentions. I can't think of it. Ryan Felipe. Philippine.
Yeah.
I just think number 2 is... it hits harder. Mm-hmm.
Tommy will be curious to see what they do with the next
installment.
If we're going to be doing the same kind of thing where they're traveling someplace.
That would be cool.
Under a false prize winning or something.
Do you think we're going to have to wait as long for a reboot?
No, I imagine if they're going to do one, they do one in the next couple of years.
Yeah, this one was like 30 years.
27. From the last one, yeah.
I think that's why a lot of people are just like, oh, well, it wasn't for us, because that nostalgic factor died. Because when they made this, we didn't even have phones.
Yeah, there was no cell phones. Yeah, so it movies have to change because now there's different ways to communicate.
Right.
And know where people are and what they're doing. So that does add, I think, to it makes it more of a struggle. Because when you didn't have a little computer locator in your pocket...
Yeah.
You didn't necessarily know where anybody was or what happened to them.
Do you remember when you're going to the movie theaters back in 97? You have to call the movie theater and listen
for the time? I mean, I was 10 at that point. But I do remember, like, we go on vacation. Like, we come down to Florida on vacation and we want to see a movie while we were here. And, you know, we get a newspaper out and then we'd look up to see what was available. And then in college, early college years... Ashley and I would call the Rave in Fort Wayne, and then we would listen, and then we'd say, okay, yeah, let's go to such and such time. Okay, so then we decided our day around whatever the movie time was that was available. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, now you don't have to do any of that anymore.
Now there's a movie every 15 minutes.
Yeah, and you can just pull it up on your phone. Now you can pick your seat ahead of time. I don't mind that, though, honestly. The picking your seat thing, especially that's a leftover more so from COVID, but I don't hate that. Knowing where you're going to sit, knowing you can sit next to whoever you're going to the movies, because, you know, some of it's a free-for-all. Some of those big theaters that were packed.
Yeah, you're just, well, whatever.
You got a couple of you going in there, yeah. If there's like two of you, it's not really a big deal, but if you got a group of friends you're trying to go, you never know where you're going to sit.
Oh, absolutely.
That's what happened when we saw The Ring when I was a youngin.
When it traumatized you.
We all got split up, yes.
And so you had to basically watch the movie by yourself.
And it was terrible.
I remember since we're telling nostalgic stories. Mm-hmm. I don't really get creeped out about horror movies. I get, except The Strangers with, not Strangers, but, yeah, it was The Strangers with, it's not John Travolta, but Tom Cruise's ex-wife, Nicole Kidman. She's a ghost in it. Mm-hmm. But I was behind two of my friends that were on a date, and I got creeped out, and I was like, can I just sit with you guys? And I ended up being the third wheel on the date.
That's really
because
funny.
I was like, oh my goodness, this shit is crazy. I mean,
that's really funny.
Again, it was made for a different time, a different place. They used to make movies differently back then. They used to distribute movies back then differently.
That's true.
I mean, you had the DVD market.
I mean, yeah.
And not anymore. Now you just have the streaming market.
It was
market.
In theaters for a while.
It was for like a good 6 months.
It would be in theaters for a long, long time. You could still catch, you could watch the movie as many times as you want. That's why, you know, Star Wars fans, all those people, especially way back in the day, loved it because they could go over and over and over again. So the movie was there forever. And then eventually we would get, it wouldn't be like a high quality, but you would get a VHS release. So you could buy the movie or go to the video store.
Or rent it.
You could rent it.
Reynolds.
Yes. And then eventually then it became a DVD thing. Same thing. You could buy the DVD or you could go and rent it from the Blockbuster, whatever your neighborhood movie rental place was, right?
Yeah.
Yep. And then we started moving to Blu-rays. And then all of a sudden, like, oh, now it's available as a digital copy. So you don't necessarily even need to have the actual disc anymore. And now it's on streaming, and guess what? You don't have to buy anything, which is sad.
Blu-ray copies were the best. They had the best stuff, the behind-the-scenes, the first looks.
They don't even do that
anymore. They had the best menus.
Yeah, you could watch
everything.
Like
the commentary of it.
Deleted scenes. Yeah, outtakes sometimes, depending on what kind of movie it was, they'd have outtakes. Yeah, they would have commentary. You could literally watch the whole movie with a commentary.
So the best part of it, if you're an independent filmmaker or you're trying to get in the filmmaking business, you would watch a DVD with the filmmaker's commentary. Mm-hmm. And it was like a 2-hour film school. Oh, this is how we did this shot. This is how we pulled this off. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many countless hours that I would watch movies with commentary and be like, okay, I can understand that or do that. So it was like a free film school built into a DVD, for a price of a DVD.
They don't do that anymore.
So.
It's sad. But anyway, anything else you want to say about this movie?
No, I liked it. It was great.
I liked it.
It hit on all four cylinders for me.
Yeah, I would rewatch it. I have no qualms against that.
It will be on streaming soon.
I'm sure.
Speaking of streaming, make sure you subscribe to LimitlessBroadcastingNetwork.com. Mm-hmm. We have streaming movies, streaming television shows, getting more each day. You have Rant Radio. You have Secrets Uncovered, The Truth Behind the Lies podcast, Strange World with Robert, Bump in the Night Chronicles, and the shows that shaped us.
In production now.
Yes, that's a
actively in production.
That's our new podcast. That's coming soon, but it's in production now. Mm-hmm. But yeah, go ahead and join, and don't forget to shop for scary merch. We have American Psycho on there. We have Frankenstein on there.
I mean, we got your classics,
Michael, Jason. So Freddy. Spooky season is upon us.
Yes.
So if you're looking for merch, LimitlessBroadcastingNetwork.com. Mm-hmm. Go support the channel.
Yes.
And the network. Mm-hmm. And we will see you in the next one. Make sure you guys stay spooky. Mm-hmm. And everybody's entitled to one good scare.
Yep. And we'll see you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
You Can't Kill the Boogeyman podcast is produced and hosted by Robbie and Sammy Brooksby as part of the Limitless Broadcasting Podcast Network. Post-production and intro by Sammy Brooksby. Follow the show on Instagram at BoogeymanPod. You can also follow the Limitless Broadcasting Company at Limitless Broadcasting and your horror hosts at Robert1950 Studios and at The Sam-a-Lam. We also have a TikTok at 1950 Studios. Email your creepy comments and spooky suggestions to us at boogeymanpod@gmail.com. Don't forget, everyone is entitled to one good scare. Have a horrific week.